Sunward Sky, Episode 2.4, Tempest. 12 minutes, 16 seconds. 38 seconds than last time. Meg watched the progress bar on the compression algorithm tick inexorably upward. 86%, 87%. She'd dumped as much of the flight control data out of the packet she was trying to send to ground as possible. What was left was being run through a compression algorithm so intense she'd be surprised if they got anything out of it but white noise when they unpacked it. That is, if they ever got that far. The orbit of Sunward Sky was sharpening, and the period of time when they were out of the Earth's shadow in relation to their ground control crew was shrinking. When she'd started trying to hail them, there had been just over 16 minutes of airtime between them, but a scant few orbits later, they were down to less than 12 and a half. 93%. She stared at the blip on the nav chart. It was going to be tight. The first set of data he hadn't even got a third of the way through before the comms array fell into the shadow and she'd had to start over. She'd sworn loudly at nobody in particular and hit the bulkhead, then spent most of the intervening time before the next broadcast sorting between the essential data and that which could easily be ignored. As soon as she got stuck in sight with the next orbit, she'd been ready. "This is Navigation Officer Meg Lanning. Broadcasting distress from Sunward Sky. Do you read? Over."
"We read you, Sunward Sky. Data transmission failed via broadwave array. Can you please transmit via digital?"
"Negative. Digital communications are down, presumed destroyed and unlikely to be repairable." A short silence on the other end.
"Please confirm. Digital communications are down?"
"Affirmative. I'm going to try to attempt to retransmit via broadwave on the next orbit. I've scrubbed the data to the essentials for ground crew assistance in resolving an emergency flight plan. Please confirm. Transceiver is operational and ready to receive." The next few minutes had been angles and bearings and calibration, then crackling silence again as the ship had sunk once again into shadow. The first transmission had failed. It had managed to get around to 95% before the ship had slipped over the horizon. From there, each transit through the shadow had sent Meg scrambling through the computer's subsystems, trying harder and harder to optimize the data so it could be sent through in their allotted window. Each time it had been faster, but not fast enough to beat the degrading communication window. That had been 11 hours ago. She rubbed her eyes and tried to ignore the image of the compression software that was burning onto her retinas. 97%. She hadn't eaten or drunk anything since she'd woken up from the crash. The food wasn't an issue, but her lips were cracked and she was starting to have trouble concentrating. If she didn't get it this time, she wasn't sure that she would. The indicator light she'd set up still blinked yellow, not out of the shadow yet. 99% compressed. She breathed deeply. The orbit of the spacecraft was almost 90 degrees out of phase with the Earth. Of course, the time window would open up again as the ship's orbit came back and round from the Antipodean side and started drifting back into view of the command post. But that would take another several days of out-of-control orbit, and they didn't have that kind of time. 100%. Meg forced her dull mind back into concentration and hovered her hand over the transmit button. She placed her palm against the rough metal edges for stability. Dehydration had made her hands shake, and if she sent it too early, the header file would be sent into the ground instead of the transceiver and make the whole file useless. The disaster area that was the ship's bridge receded into the background as she watched the blinking light. Yellow. Black. Yellow. Black. Yellow. Black. Green. Meg slammed her finger into the transmit button and allowed herself a brief moment of reprieve. She sank onto her knees. The flight suit scuffed slightly onto the floor, and she sobbed silently as the details of the Sunward Sky's current trajectory and state were sent to the ground.
"Don," Alyssa suggested, "come have a look at this."
The other lab tech came over and peered at the datasheet of results that Alyssa had propped in front of her. A series of nigh incomprehensible scatterplots fanned out along the desk on false paper marks behind the screen. Alyssa knew Don thought her insistence on keeping on haptic feel of real paper alive in her research notes was quaint, but it allowed her to compartmentalize a lot better than standard file structure, especially when you could lay it all out like this.
"What?"
He was irritated, but this was par for the course. The two of them had been working together since before they'd finished their doctorates, and Don's
old before his time, irritable shtick had become such a standard part of Alyssa's workday that she didn't even notice anymore. She had better things to do.
Look, this latest batch. Electrolytic response is through the roof on it. It has some weird reactions with alkali metals and...
She pulled a digital rendition of an amino acid molecule that a neural network was trying to fold into a complex series of protein chains. She pulled a synth file along and dragged the two things off the false pieces of paper and set them adrift in a virtual 3D sandbox. The synth file loaded, flickered, and then drifted to where the enormous protein chain sat inert. After a few seconds, the amino acid started folding into the protein structure and binding to the synthetic representation of the data that Alyssa had just shown Don. It was folding a lot faster than the neural network had been, and it wasn't making mistakes. Don refused to be impressed. Huh. Neat. Let's see if he can get to do that in real life. He wandered away. Alyssa found herself wondering, not for the first time, if he'd just lucked his way into postdoctoral research. She turned back to the screen desk and pulled a few more files toward herself. The protein folded neatly into its component parts, then flickered, reset, and started again.
See if you can get to do it in real life. That was always the trick, wasn't it? Alyssa thought.
The manufacture of the thing was always going to be in the hard part, but an idea was starting to form in her head. She smiled.
That was the first time I really knew I had something, she said to Healy, who was administering a saline drip into her arm and watching her quietly.
It seemed as though even the ever-present carabiners on his flight suit had quieted down. He kept his mouth shut, listening softly to her as she answered the question he'd asked to distract her, but also to find out about how she'd stumbled across this medicine he'd been told about.
A few weeks later, Don got on board.
I figured out the majority of the issues with manufacturer, see? Guy knew when to jump onto a rising star, that's for sure. She scoffed. What an idiot. Healy smiled. He wasn't any sort of grand physician or psychiatrist like the kind they had back down on Terra, but he knew how to calm down a panic attack or sensory overload with the best of them. She'd arrived, carrying the poor dead girl whose name he still didn't know, with the blank terror behind the eyes that he usually saw from first-time spacefarers when they realized that all that was separating themselves from certain death was scant centimeters of welded metal. Usually he calmed them down and scoffed at them a little when they left. Not this time, though. He couldn't afford to have Alyssa break. She was his key. She still hadn't commented on the fact that two of the women that had tried to kill her scant hours ago were unconscious on the medbay decks, nor that the room had smelled of a burned alcohol that was coming from the spill on the other side of the room. She propped up against one of the cupboards, breathing shallowly but no longer hyperventilating. Her eyes were still glazed and unfocused, but that would clear in a few minutes, Healy knew. Though the trauma of this accident might lend one a haunted look behind the eyes for a bit longer than a bit of a fright about being on a spaceship in the first place, he reflected. I'm just going to get you something to eat. I'm not leaving the room. I'll just be over there, he jesped. All right? When she nodded, he stood up, clinking and groaning, and started shuffling gently to the small food store he kept there for emergencies. Sweet foods, like jellies and sherbets, lined the bottom row in vacuum-sealed pods. He scooped up a handful and grabbed a white pack from the top. He tore off the tab at the top of the white package and held it under a water dispenser at the center of the room. He felt the packet warm up as the insides of it fizzed and bubbled. After a few minutes, he grunted with satisfaction, then shuffled back to where Alyssa was watching him quietly. Here you go, he said, throwing her a few of the packets of lollies, then handing her the warm white foil packet. Best save some of those sweets for after the pottage, Alyssa. I've never eaten it, but I've heard it tastes like shit. Alyssa chuckled and popped one of the jellies into her mouth. They're gonna try and kill me still, aren't they? She said. It wasn't really a question, Healy thought. She was just airing a fact she now knew about the world. The shadows behind her eyes deepened as he nodded. They were trying to kill everyone, he said simply. They're a suicide cult, even though they didn't know it yet. He looked out the window at the debris field where one of the other wings should have been. At this rate, it might not matter. If they don't kill you, I might already have done so. Alyssa closed her eyes, processing the information. When she opened them again, she put the white packet to her lips and squeezed the sides. After a second, she sputtered, then laughed helplessly. This really does taste like shit. 86%. 87. Meg's knuckles were white. Her mouth was dry, her skin was filthy, and her hair was greasy and wild from where she'd been running her hands through it. Her eyes itched with dehydration and fatigue, and she watched one set of numbers creep inexorably up and another set down. Come on. Her voice was hoarse. Desperate. Come on. The light was still green, but wasn't going to stay that way for long. She didn't want to use the rest of the comms array to talk. She knew it wouldn't make a difference, but at this point she wasn't going to push her luck. 92%. Oh, come on, you fucking thing. She whispered furiously at the terminal. She needed this to go through. She'd run all the numbers she could think of, and the best case scenario was that in just over a week they were going to burn up over Brazil and spend the last hour of their lives becoming a light show for the residents of most of the countries in South America. 96%. 97%. 98. 99. There was a small chime as the file transfer reached 100%, and a scant second later a voice appeared on the line.
Sunward Sky, we can confirm receipt of...
The radio cut off. They were back in the shadow. Meg turned and lurched out of the control room. Healy stumped along the corridor, heading towards the mess hall as best he could. His usual shortcut through a particularly wide maintenance shaft had been shut off from him, as he had been met with a hissing mess of pipes and conduits. He had to double back 50 meters or so once he'd realized. Alyssa was still in the med bay, now relatively calm. The hunted look in her eyes remained, but considering there was a cult on the ship that wanted her dead, he couldn't do much more to help that. At the very least, he could try to get her some food that wasn't just emergency stores, so she'd stop looking quite so peaky. He was in the mess, digging around in what remained of the crew locker when he heard someone move behind him. He darted around as quickly as his old body would allow, and saw Meg standing in the doorway. "Good God, why does everyone in here look like shit?" she said. She hadn't realized how thirsty she'd been until she'd had that first gulp of water. She and Healy sat in the ruined mess hall together and eaten and told each other what had happened at the opposite ends of the ship. She'd gasped when she'd heard of Isa's plight, and Healy had done his best to mask his anxiety when she told him of the last 11 hours of trying to get the information to ground control. "Don't worry, Heels," she said through a mouthful of food. "If I were you, I'd have done the same thing. Lesser of two evils, right?" Healy stayed perfectly still as she continued. "I mean, fuckers were gonna make everything go dark. Couldn't have figured out how to fix it with software in time. Fuck no, best thing to do is turn us into a big metal rock and throw ourselves at what's threatening us. It's what humans have been doing to threats since before we were humans. Don't stress." He hadn't seemed convinced, she thought as she made her way back to the bridge. She was in far better shape now than she had been. The itchiness behind her eyes was nothing more than tiredness, and a caffeine pill or two would hold that issue at bay a little longer. Her stomach no longer hurt, and her mind was clear now that it wasn't preoccupied with where it was going to find water. She got back to the bridge with about 5 minutes to spare, and spent it setting up a series of questions for the ground control staff. She would have just under 12 minutes this time round, so she'd have to make it sharp if she wanted any answers. The light flashed. Yellow. Black. Yellow. Black. Yellow. Black. Green. She moved her thumb the intercom, but before she got her hand toward it, the speaker rang out.
"Sunward Sky, come in, Sunward Sky. Ground control to Sunward Sky. Come in, Sunward Sky. Ground control."
"Sunward Sky here. Go ahead, ground control."
"We've run the calculations with the data you've sent us, Sunward Sky. We have a time-saving jettison maneuver for you to undertake. Please see Broadwave transmission sent via previous channel."
The display had a small rectangular icon with what looked like a growing green X on it. Meg thumbed it open and pored through it. Yep, a time save. That's all they were getting. There were a series of jettisons that were to be made in conjunction with thruster blasts at specific times over the next 36 hours. And that would give them a few more days before the orbit degraded too roughly to be salvageable again. Then what was the plan? Send a rescue ship? She had no idea how many souls were still alive on board, but it would be a difficult lifeboat mission. It also seemed unlikely that the company would even bother. Why send more people up to space to rescue those that might not even survive a suboptimal re-entry anyway? Meg's mind was drawn back to the transceiver, as the speaker on the other end was still talking.
Aberration in the orbit that we can only explain through a propellant that hasn't been accounted for.
I'm sorry, she cut in. Say that again.
While running our numbers, we couldn't match the data with the orbit you were taking, using the thruster information you've sent through. There's something else causing the ship to shift north in its orbit slightly more than we're reading here.
Meg froze. She knew all the thrusters were either working as they should be, or were shut down. Alyssa had seen to that earlier. And if it hadn't worked, the ship wouldn't even be on an approximately correct course. There were only two things that could be causing that. Leaking fuel, spraying rapidly expanding liquid mix into the cosmos, or oxygen.